used to a couple of things. It just seems to always go like clockwork. Somebody was to apply for some sort of commercial or higher density use permit, and on an older house, and neighbors would come in and read about, oh, there's going to destroy our neighborhood, wreck our property values, and the commission and the council would just ignore them and give the zoning change. And they came in this time. I expected that line of stuff to come from. This time it was an adjacent nursing home wanted to buy an old house, and a number of people came in, no property values, no dollars. Oh, please don't let them take away and destroy our castle. What? So I was not driving in, but I had two Mercedes cars. One of them I got, but I had a huge one. I had a huge Mercedes car. It was a Model 600. It was the biggest one. It was in 69. And when they just quit making them, they were well over $100,000. When I paid at the factory, $18,000 on a special deal. And I got it treated like royalty. They only made something like 50 a year of these things. And you still see them in movies. Big chrome radiator, long fenders, and sleek looking thing. And this one was one of the things I got was it had 50 miles on it because it had been used in the James Bond movie. Secret Service. I don't know if you ever see that. You ever see those in Bond? Mm-hmm. This is the one where Kelly Savalas survives his broken neck and he has this wicked woman. And he comes zooming up and shoots Diana Rigg at James Bond in her wedding. Mm-hmm. In this car. Well, I was a car. And, big silver gray Mercedes, like 6,000 pounds. And a 450 horsepower V8 engine, and it was supercharged mechanically. It was not supercharged, it was fuel injected mechanically. It looked like a diesel, except it had spark plugs in the open. So it was a magnificent boost, polished aluminum engine. And it was, these things were sold mostly to people in Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan and places like that where they're really rich. You can move the car and they could get away real fast for unpleasant occasions. And this thing had two speakers that were standard. They had a four-speed automatic transmission, but the first speed was not an overdrive. It was an underdrive below the first speed. It was the underdrive below what's normally the first speed. And you step on the gas hard, and then this kicks in. And all 6,000 pounds of this car goes, boom, like the roadrunner taking off the cartoon. It's incredible to see this car do this. And another thing is that it has a bunch of extra stalks on the steering control. One of them.
You still have it?
No, I sold it in 86. I'll tell you why. But the car lifts up 3 inches. And move another one, and it increases the stiffness of the shocks so that if you're going to a really bumpy rough road, you lift it up 6 inches, and if that isn't enough, you increase the stiffness of the shocks. Or if you want to go above 130 miles an hour, you move it down and then run the shocks down. I think it'll go 155. I've done it up to 145. It's really, it doesn't feel bad. It doesn't tend to flip down the road like a lot of sports car was on your 50, but it just feels completely solid. It feels like you're not going to move it from its course, but it's solid. And anyway, a friend drove me into this place with this car. Well, the reason we bought the car is we were revamping our European dealers, and we got those things. They're really good, and then the financial officer and my brother and I found out that it cost us about $6,000 or something like that to rent a car for 2 months. Just an ordinary car, the recoverable price. Looking at this thing, you net off that, that would be maybe $8,000. Anyway, when you include the investment credit and the fact that there was no duty on the thing because it came back as a used car because it put a lot of miles on the clock on it. $9,000 on it. A few years later, they were selling them in the United States for $120. And the purpose of getting rid of this unusual thing was we wanted to impress and intimidate our dealers and potential dealers in Europe because they're really class conscious and only somebody with none of the highest class would be afraid to own one of these things, or won't have trouble affording it. And that worked real well for that purpose. our Dutch dealer still talks about it. I remember I was with him, Phil went to get the car after in Amsterdam. Phil went to go get the car, which is parked around the corner, and it was all cobblestone sidewalk and stuff. And this guy's looking around the corner, see what kind of car comes around the corner, and he looks and sees Phil's dad, and he said in Dutch, but it was perfectly obvious what he said. He said, it was plainly simple. My God, it's a 600. Yeah. He admits he was really surprised. Well, let's see. Anyway, the house was in a jungle. You could only see it in the winter, and this was in the summer. And there was just kind of one, two bushes and trees all around it. And we got a little close to it, and there's a break in the trees, and suddenly I can see the house. And I can see the west gable and how it was curved, and the white stained glass windows. And I can also see that the shingles were blanched and falling out, and the foundation was cracked, and stuff like that. And I just looked at it, and I could feel my eyes start to hurt. I wanted to cry, because it just looked so sad and forlorn, like a beautiful woman that's, what I thought of was a beautiful woman that's fallen on hard times. And it took me a while to get that thought out of my head, and I still think of it. And so I thought about, well, what would you do to get a house like that? It would be fair by my life. And in 1979, he was gone. The next 2 years later, the planning commission threw it out, but not unanimously, but someone went there and everybody to look at it. They rolled it out, and we wanted to turn out the expensive nursing home. And 3 years later, they were back again with the same thing, with a slicker presentation of buttery charts and stuff like that. And they were just about thrown out by the planning commission, and someone was lobbying the planning, the city hall about it. And just about threw them out of the council chamber. And this was a succession of people who tried to restore it. First one owned a trucking company, and his business went bad for some reason or another. And it was bought by a restaurant tour. One of them had a really tremendous success building a theme restaurant in downtown, which he sold for a vast profit. Then I got word that he was an expert on building theme restaurants. So he built another one, but unfortunately he was a coke smoker. And one of the things I understand that does too is it makes you think you're much smarter than you really are. And he was brilliant. And he was an excellent too. He was out of luck. And he came to the Planning Commission in 1979, and I wanted to convert to the last hope, I wanted to convert this place into a theme restaurant. I thought, oh, this is really great. It's about being replaced now, but I had more to do with it in 1978, Lincoln's planning code, than anybody else. And one of the things that I got put in there was a provision for special use permits for National Register properties that would allow them to have commercial uses in residential areas, providing such commercial uses would tend to preserve the property more than existing or other residential uses might. Mm-hmm. And so it was in that, and I was chairman at that time, and I was excited about this. He was the salvation of his house that I looked at, and there were two meetings, one the public hearing and one the executive meeting, and it seemed to do real well in the public hearing. We had a lot of positive sounding questions. The neighbors came around and complained about their property values. What they thought against their property value was an addition property, that's the way they would call it. Mm-hmm. And as well as preserve their castle. During the executive session, I left for Michigan because our second oldest daughter was getting married, and I missed the executive meeting, and which was between Christmas and New Year's. The night of the marriage, after the marriage, a blizzard hit there, and it was like 2 feet of snow and nothing would move, and it just kept on coming. And a utility vehicle or Jeep Cherokee or airport, and the door opened and see people sleeping on the floor in the airport, and bad sign, so we stayed around until we could get out of there, and that was probably about the 15th of January.
Which year was this now?
79.
Yeah.
In February, somebody on the commission said, well, it looks like that Mr. Potter isn't going to be able to get his restaurant after all. And I thought, oh, that's too bad. And I said, he probably couldn't get the financing he had in mind. Anyway, I got the idea he was looking to sell it, and I couldn't buy it because I had out of my house had a swimming pool in it. I had been told that I had to swim daily or I would die and all that kind of stuff. I guess I hated it. It was something I had to do. Oh, I used to like to swim. Shorter times and less frequent all the time, so it was also another reason I didn't like that pool is the dog that I bought to replace and that's drowned in it. Mm-hmm. It was smart as that was. My younger son went with me on a plane to Rochester, and check me in there, and the second, I was there 2 weeks, my wife was going to be with me the second week. After all this Mickey Mouse that they did with me to examine me, treat me, my wife and I were talking to a doctor that was supposed to tell us what to do to survive longer, and I said, well, I said, one thing I got a swimming pool in my house, and maybe I can use it more than I have been doing. I said, no, I've been sloughing off. The doctor would look at me. Said, you don't want it to. It was absolutely no interest to him because I had just discovered the first polio syndrome, which was brought on by over-exercise for those polio patients, polio survivors. Well, up until that time, the only thought was you had to exercise until you drop. And people, I didn't believe that because when I exercise until I got tired, I didn't get this good warm feeling that you normally get. I feel sick, pukey, and I felt there was something that was wrong. And oh, don't worry about that. No pain, no gain, and all this. But I still didn't believe it. I thought that's because I didn't exercise as much as I was supposed to, and that's why I'm alive today. I've been dead by before 1980. When he said that, Mary and I looked at each other, and she said, we'll do this type of thing. Now we can get rid of our goddamn house. My mother died in the place, and I was complaining being Irish. I thought it was haunted by her spirit. And I needed it from all the bad memories. And I went and talked to Potter about this on the phone. Are you the bomber out here and have a planning commission? And I said, yes. And he came out with a terrible profane language and loud. I should have heard. I finally convinced him, what's the matter? I said, well, you don't know you bastards. Put me down so I couldn't. Young man, now you're, it was all a plot. Now you're trying to buy the house. And I convinced him that wasn't the case. I wasn't even there. I thought he was going to win. I thought the only reason that he couldn't make a war happen was he lost his finances. He said, well, financing has some of the problem. You don't want to ask me, I'll talk to you. So I talked to him. It was one of my best behavior and convinced him of what I said was true. And inside the house was a disaster. There was one place where the ceiling was gone under that water line, and the floor was gone under it. And he ranged his furniture around the hole in the floor. it was terrible. But then, I still was crazy about this house. I found out the reason is it was really having its financial problems. In any event, is that the house. Well, I wasn't out there too late. He had a contract with the New South Neighborhood Association for $150. $150,000. And they were out getting the money because they were getting government grants and stuff like that, and Lincoln Foundation grants. At that time, they could get a grant to build a fish pond in your backyard. And this grant money was just all over the place in the 70s. And didn't dry up until the 80s. And he had $255,000 debt on this $150,000 house. So even though this association had come up with $150,000, they couldn't close. And the government money said that they couldn't close, they'd take the money back immediately. So there it was with like $70,000 and couldn't buy a house. But these other people still had the whip hand with the contract. So I was in good terms with these people because I was a preservation member, so to speak, of the City Planning Commission. And I knew most of them. I knew their lawyer. I went over to his office and talked about this. They were really interested in finding some excuse to sell me this thing without losing face. One of the problems with this house is that the lot was too large to take care of. It was an extension of the lot. We went to a place where school children walk from a nearby school. And he said, you have more lot here than you need. How about you digging off 100 feet of this the west side of your lot and we'll give it to the city for a city park, which we'll name after your house. The house is named Maple Lodge. It's one of the named houses. We have a little Maple Lodge Park. And And you also have to promise to best effort to restore the house, or that was like throwing a little something in the brush. When I looked at this, and I didn't want to lose 150 feet, and I looked at the original lot plan, and showed that some of the, there was an elaborate way to turn it into the, to turn in and turn in and turn out of the double garage. This thing had one of the first double garage attached garage in Lincoln. And said, oh, that's a very historic and like that, and I got them down to 75 feet, which is just exactly what I wanted. Paid for this. I had to make a $20,000 investment in this dining restaurant, and about $50,000 worth of expensive furniture for about $10,000, which was separate from this land sale. For the land sale deal, so that was isolated from his creditors. He made a deal with his creditors to $160,000 for $255,000. So everybody went away happy, and then we had the problem of fixing it up. And I had probably about a dozen men working on that place for a year before it was good enough for us to move in, at full time. Every trade you can imagine, an electrician, electricians, elevator installers, stonemasons, lots of carpenters, painters, and they got money. And my oldest brother and my wife wanted me to board the place up and save some more money. I was afraid what would happen to them. We did, because they got some food that already come in once and tried to steal some stained glass windows as we got them back. And that uninhabited fancy house in this neighborhood, which is a kind of run-down, poor neighborhood, old neighborhood that fits the age of the house. And I worked out a deal, worked with the engineer through the way, only did just so much and then stopped. And then it was just enough so that we could eat, live in the house and enjoy it, but not really fixed up entirely. And the leaks fixed and the floors fixed and everything worked, but things were loose and unthinking and stuff like that. And I had a 1.5 full-time equivalents working on it for 2 years full-time. And people were working on it. And I knew that it was a fantastic expense. I just used up all the money that I had. And the Esco stock wasn't liquid at that time. And I couldn't borrow money in my bank. My banker told me, I was also the director of the company, a friend, oh, yeah, you can borrow the money when you need it. I was going to need another extra $100,000. And during the bank crisis, where there just wasn't enough money floating around to give loans, the bastards backed out of their loan during the loan. Changed banks since. So we got something we didn't want to do, and I sold our present house before we had this one done. And it turned out to be fantastically easy to sell, because the same employee, lousy sales, but real insurance sold itself and said, oh, we won't get anything extra for this same employee. You get $100,000 for a house like this out of a swimming pool at that time. And they had a swimming pool that I thought was probably worth $30,000. We can't get anything for that. So they had it listed at $100,000. And before it was actually listed, some guy snapped it up. Was I fried? He called me up and he said, well, what do you pay for the house? And I said, $100,000. He says, don't be silly. He says, everybody comes down to town. I said, not me. I said, But I was smitten by that real estate saleswoman, and it's going to be $100,000 until the real estate sales contract expires, and I'm going to have it listed for $140,000. And the boys bought it.
I'll take it.
So I lost some money there, but at least I got that. Anyway, we met with this. We had done until just now, always half jobs on getting the shingles fixed. And finally decided to spend the money in the aggravation, listen to the noise. It's done now. It's done as much as any house is done. It's absolutely a gorgeous house. It has two turrets, one a broad turret on the front porch, and something that's still in a tall castle-like turret with a whip and climbing a flagpole on top of it. Yard with fountains.
Sounds wonderful.
It's a great place to live.
Yeah. It's on the historic register.
Well, let's see. I was going to say something about a personal thing that the guy left a hole in there. I told you something about 85. 85 was a very big year for me. The most important thing to me was that I was confirmed in the Episcopal Church. And a close second is the faculty of the Department of Chemistry were awarded me an honorary Doctor of Science in Chemistry. And it was not something that I got for contributing to the university, and it was awarded by the Board of Regents. This was awarded by people in the local chem department who were aware of my work in chemistry. And that's why I got the doctor. And so because of that, I'm very proud of that doctor.
Well, it's an earned doctorate.
Huh?
An earned doctorate.
I feel it was earned. And let's see, what was the other thing? Oh, also I was elected, the Small Business Administration selected me as National Small Business Person of the Year. And the fourth thing was, IPO. And I took my share of it, and I figured I was had too much, way too much investment in equities, what was this called, voting 46%, so I put that in debt securities, and we're a really good manager, and it was $1 million, and it's up to 2.7 now, and that's what's taken some on it too. Mm-hmm. It's earned almost 6% a year, and it's tax free. Mm-hmm. That's probably, I wouldn't do that if it wasn't so already so top heavy. And I said, it's too risky now, because it's all equities and it's all one company.
Can you say something about, I asked you a little earlier about research and innovation, and you've been the great driver of that, and you're still, from the sound of it, you're still quite actively engaged.
Well, I'm engaged more as convincer and mentor. I have little projects on my own. I used to have a personal staff of researchers who would get ideas, and they would scurry around trying to make any type of discharge gas lamp. One of the most fun things I ever did was succeed in making an antimony discharge lamp using microwave discharge. The little thing small, low enough powered so that it could be fit inside of a chromatographic detector. And I was not concerned, I was concerned that the we would have in production, I got made one works that were real reliable, you'd have to fiddle with it. But the, I was afraid it wouldn't be fiddle free. Our competitor, RKB, had one with an iodine like that. And, it was 206 millimeters, and that thing was there. And you have to take the lamp out and rub it on your sleeve like the, like a labyrinth rod or something like that and put it back in. Something maybe still wasn't light. And next day it would be different and it would be light. This wasn't that bad, but in fact I had it running for 2,000 hours without touching it. And the problems to overcome, one was to build a miniature low-power microwave unit, and I managed to mount a tapered waveguide on a